Governor Eric Holcomb delivered his sixth State of the State address, live and in person, to a joint session of the General Assembly this week, resuming a long-standing practice that was interrupted last year when COVID-19 forced the governor to pre-record his annual update off-site. This year, the second-term Republican devoted the bulk of his half-hour speech to a long list of economic successes that have made Indiana what he described as the shiny new buckle on what was known as the Rust Belt. Despite his return to the House rostrum and his upbeat assessment of the state's fiscal future, the governor did not ignore the pandemic. He concluded his address with a plea for all Hoosiers to get fully vaccinated, even if they disagreed with every action his administration has taken to safeguard the state. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll dive into the governor's message with the man who delivered it, Governor Eric Holcomb. Whenever a leading political figure delivers a major address, journalists are wont to enlist an assortment of political pundits and subject matter experts to parse the speech's meaning and weigh its significance. But why do that when you can instead go straight to the source, which is precisely what I'll do right now? I am pleased to welcome Governor Eric Holcomb. Governor, thank you for joining us. You began your speech with a quote about optimism in the face of challenges and difficulty from Winston Churchill. And I was intrigued by that, not just at face value, but as a student of history, you know all about Winston Churchill. He's revered in England and around the world. But at times in his tenure, he was at odds with his own party, his government. His government almost dissolved before World War II because there were those who wanted to appeasement, to negotiate with Nazi Germany. He said, no, this is a terrible threat, an existential threat. We're going to keep fighting, no negotiation. You know where I'm headed with this.
I do, indeed.
So am I going to get an A-plus from my English teacher back in high school if I say, is this a modern allegory, a metaphor? Is COVID the modern-day Nazi Germany? And are you, Winston Churchill, sometimes at odds with your own party?
Far from being in a league with Winston Churchill. He's in a league with few others, but including Lincoln and others who have faced similar challenges. But this is, of course, a battle, and this is, of course, you have to summon the collective will in order to address specific hardships. And obviously, what I admire about Winston Churchill so much, not just how eloquent he is, what an incredible orator he was, how he could frame things up, but a couple other things I appreciated about him, and I tried to sprinkle that in the address as well, was humor. He could lighten the mood at times, even during the most serious of threats. And what he never sacrificed was courage to do the right thing. And so whether folks said, thanks for getting us through that, now here's the door, or here's your hat, what's your hurry, like out with you, he did the right thing. And that's somewhat liberating when you're passionate about just doing the right thing. So I think what is being proven is we need to continue to stay focused on that delicate balance of our lives, of course, and our livelihoods, and both are dependent on one another. And so what I tried to express was, as Winston Churchill always did, was I was extremely optimistic about how we've gotten through our resilience and our perseverance, how we've gotten through this last couple 2 years of what, you know, is in our lifetimes the most challenging time of all.
I noticed the humor at several points in the speech, and one that stood out was when you offered your plea toward the end of the address, and I think you used the word plea, beg, Hoosiers to get vaccinated. And you frame that in the context of saying, because then we can continue to disagree on some of these issues, an acknowledgement that there are large portions of the state, including many in your own party and many in your own party who happen to be in the General Assembly, who have been vocal in opposition to some of your policies.
Yeah, it's just not a party thing with me. This is about doing the right thing. There are big disagreements in families, not just in political parties, but in families. One thing I continue to hear is I'm trying to convince my mother or father or grandparents to get vaccinated. I carry around a couple charged with me everywhere I go. And we know, and I express this in the State of the State address, we know that if you get vaccinated, if you get boosted, odds are you don't end up in a hospital or in the ICU or losing your life. And so that's what I was trying to express is we can disagree about all kinds of things. And we need to. That's healthy. And we can do that with civility. I'm trying to practice what I preach and lead by example. But it doesn't ever remove the fact that if you get vaccinated, if you get boosted, you're going to be doing your part to, one, save lives, folks you don't even know, maybe even your family, and lessen the load on our healthcare network that is so critically, critically being overrun right now.
Well, in fact, the same day that you delivered your address Tuesday, I believe, was something of an unfortunate milestone, in that was a record high in terms of hospital censuses for the number of people who have been admitted and are receiving care for COVID. Sort of a harsh reminder that we're not done with this yet. And yet, at the same time, you were speaking in the chamber. We had lawmakers, many not wearing masks. The leadership in the House certainly started the session by saying we're back to normal. The plexiglass panels are gone. Public testimony now is taking place in person, not via closed circuit television. The chamber is actually buzzing again this year. The last year, the House met, certainly, as you know, in Indiana Government Center South, where it could be more spaced out. Is that sending the right message? Do you think lawmakers, this ostensible sense of a return to normal is the right thing to do from a practical standpoint, health standpoint, or more broadly, from an optics standpoint and a messaging standpoint?
Well, I think if it's coupled with the fact that you express just how important it is, as have members I've talked with, how important it is to get vaccinated and to get boosted, then you can continue to live your life. You have to make some adjustments, of course. And I'm always uber polite wherever I go, if on their policies, on their ground. So if there's certain social distancing that's put in place, even for folks who are vaccinated or not, I'm going to play by those rules when I'm in a certain business. And the same goes for upstairs. I've said very early on, almost a couple of years ago, they rule the roost up there, and I respect that. And we do in our office. And so we have different protocols within this very same building. But the fact remains that what we need to be expressing, everyone, is to get vaccinated and get boosted. And that will be the single biggest contributor to bringing down those census numbers that you just cited.
And, you know, so much attention has been paid to the differences between the administration and some of the most vocal opponents of the governor's public health order. That's, we don't have to hash that out. In fact, that'll be litigated still post-session in the Indiana Supreme Court. We have that to look forward to. But if you get into the legislative priorities, some related to COVID, some not, although I guess you could argue that this day and age, everything to a certain extent is related to COVID. There's still that dichotomy, that the differences. If someone were to cover up the lower third watching your address or put a box over your face, it could be, and some would argue, even a Democratic governor. It would have been largely indistinguishable from, say, an Evan Bayh State of the State, in as much as you focused on the successes of the states in terms of economic development. You talked about the challenges of public health and shoring up the workforce and quality of life issues and investing in health and so forth. Meanwhile, you see Republican legislative priorities are things such as not rolling back the order once and for all, making sure governors, you and others who succeed you, don't have as much power in that regard. They're focused on things like critical race theory in school curricula. I mean, do you ever feel like reminding them that you're the person, if I believe I'm correct in saying you've received more votes in the history of Indiana as a statewide candidate at the state level than any other human, do you ever feel like I should remind them of that?
I don't think I need to remind them of that. I think, and it's, to me, it's not about, while it happens to be how I got elected, I ran on more opportunity in terms of our economic development. I ran on more opportunity in terms of our community development and more opportunity in terms of workforce development. And that meaning, as you mentioned, you know, K through 12, all the way through the health of our citizens. What those three fronts represent to me is my agenda, and everything feeds into that. Now, there's only one of me. There's 150 of them. And I would just remind everyone that we always start. I've seen this movie before. I've been in this building now. I used to think I was a newcomer, but it's I worked for a couple of my predecessors. And so I have no excuses. I know what the job's about, and I know where we start, and I know where we finish. And I know how many different opinions. We're going to soon come up on the milestone of seeing just how many bills are actually filed and moved forward. We're going to see how many bills are actually passed on a bipartisan effort and unanimously. And so while it does make for a good copy or good print or good air to just focus on the differences, we have a lot of conversations, ongoing conversations. We have a very good working relationship. I think I do on both sides of the aisle. And I'll continue to practice again what I preach with civility and try to get things that are meaningful to the long-term betterment of our state done. And that's what my agenda does reflect, has reflected, and will over the course of the next 3 years.
And that agenda is not harmed by the likelihood that HB 1001, for instance, is enacted, that in fact the order ends, and let's presume that federal assistance is preserved in some areas, Medicaid and food assistance and so forth. So right. That would not. But in terms of the employer, the notion that employers would no longer be able to enforce, say, a vaccine mandate, does that affect economic impact? This is an at-will state. You and your Republican predecessors have always said it's a great business climate. Businesses aren't handcuffed by a lot of regulation. Does this change that potentially?
I think it could. At least that's what I hear from the private sector and from the business community, not just the association and the leadership level, but those smaller businesses who just can't afford to take that chance. And so I'm listening to them. I philosophically am with them. But I also think, I don't want to do anything to derail our momentum, and any little thing in today's world can do just that.
So are you saying you're still willing, or you're going to go to the mat to try to prevent that aspect of 1001?
I'm going to the mat to try to get the three things I have asked for, and everything else, to me, I think is counterproductive to our collective goals.
One other area of disagreement, I know you just sort of chided the media for focusing on the areas of disagreement, and we will talk about some other things as well. But on the surplus, it's a good problem to have, I suppose. You're sitting potentially on maybe upwards of $3-5 billion. And we already are going to have automatic tax refunds, $125 in all likelihood on average for Hoosiers. But again, the House Republicans want to see a permanent tax cut for personal income tax. It was 3%. Now I hear there's a move to make it even lower, so it sounds better. I guess 2.9 sounds better than as any retailer will tell you during sales season. Bad idea, you think?
Well, I'm being cautious because we're living in this in this time of a couple years now where we've seen a number of things, factors that I think give us a inflated or could be misleading or false radar screen. That being obviously COVID, but also the tens of billions of dollars that have come in from the federal government, not all spent yet, but much of it has been, and it's entered into our economy, entered into our revenues and sales tax collections, et cetera. And so as I look at the course of the next 11, months going into the budget session, what I don't want to do, I want to measure twice and cut once. And if that means a bigger cut 11, 12, 13 months from now, so be it. I'm not adverse to cutting taxes whatsoever. We've been doing that, cutting, taxes or fees 19 times over the last 15 years, I think it is. So, and you just mentioned a couple areas. I'm pushing one for business personal property, eliminating that 30% tax floor. So where we can do it responsibly, but what I don't want to do is get out there on a limb and then wish, as we're looking at, as I've mentioned, I'm passionate about $500 million for Ready Grant, round two. I want to address the future of work for state employees, which will include some salary and wage considerations. So, you know, when we look at manufacturing modernization grants, I want that to continue. When we look at doing more in terms of workforce ready grants and employer training grants, I want to do more of that. That's working. That's what I talked about to try to make the case for, let's do more of what's working. But those have fiscals. Now, what ends up happening is they generate more revenue as the economy, as the pie grows. And so we just have to make sure we're doing this responsibly. And that's my point right now during a short non-budget session and giving us a little time where tens of billions of dollars isn't continuing to come into our state on top of what already does.
Does your concern rise to the level of a veto potentially on that front?
I mean, John, you and I have known each other for many, many years. I've sat at the table with you and the business has been hurt the worst over the last 2 years is the prediction business. And so I'm not making predictions this early in a short session when I'm having very constructive, good conversations with leaders. And you know, I wasn't chiding the media for earlier. Your business model is different than mine. I've got weeks and months ahead of me.
Hey, we're nonprofit. We don't have a business model. Don't worry about us.
We're nonprofit too. But I've got weeks, days, weeks, months ahead of me to make sure we land planes safely, and we're having daily discussions to do just that. And so I'm not trying to make a prediction about, you know, today and how it will affect today's discussions. We've got time to be dealing with all these issues.
Well, I am reminded on the prediction front that it was a state budget committee, I think in June of 2020, a few months into the COVID, we're predicting a $3 billion shortfall for the biennium. So I guess
the
crystal ball may have been broken or a little bit cracked on that front. You've already alluded to this, but a lot of what you talked about in your speech and what your message is, you know, we're in great shape as a state. Certainly people are still hurting individually, and we're not where we want to be. There are jobs that have gone unfilled, we'll stipulate that. But things are generally good compared to most other states. And you're saying look forward to the next session, budget session. You have a lot of task forces looking at mental health, public health. That's the culmination. Are you saying buckle your seatbelts, because 2023 is when the real action takes place?
Oh, I think 2023 is going to be a comprehensive year. We've got so much. I didn't even mention the Public Health Commission and what that's uncovering and the fiscal needs that will expose. And so what I'm saying is when we make, you know, 100, 200, 300, 400, $500 million decisions, probably best to do that in a budget session and to do that with broad support. So when you're asking me what my agenda is, I'm telling you, and none of my agenda is at odds with that.
And we should also point out your agenda and your speech, they don't mention the social issues. And that's a tradition you've maintained in sort of the Mitch Daniels model. No talk of abortion restrictions, no talk of constitutional carry where you can have a gun without a permit, no talk of bail limitations, restrictions to combat crime. I'm sure that's intentional. Again, are you worried that issues like that, which tend to use a cliche, suck oxygen out of a room, including the State House and the chambers of the House and Senate, will get in the way of some of the issues you want to see addressed this session?
No, I think, you know, I want to be very respectful to every member that runs and what they're passionate about. This is the people's house, and this is where you're supposed to have those discussions and those debates. And bring your agenda that you were elected on to the people's house, and let's get at it. But I'm also reminded every single session that there are a lot of ideas that never make it to the post, that never go the whole distance. And there has to be support in both chambers. You just talked about taxes. There's a difference of opinion in the Senate and the House on taxes as well. So what gets to my desk ultimately, and what I start to see in the second half of the session, short or long, that's you know, we're following it every single day, but I'm not gonna be weighing in on every single issue. I'm focused on my agenda like they're focused on their agenda, rightfully so, and I'll weigh in when I think it's appropriate.
What's your biggest worry this session? What do you wake up? You're a good sleeper. You don't wake up at 2 a.m., but if you're one of those people who did, what would be worrying you about this session?
Just making sure that we don't do anything that interrupts the momentum that we're having. We are making progress on so many fronts. You're right. We have more work to do in a lot of areas. But look, when you look at population growth, when you look at wage growth, when you look at revenues, when you look at new job commitments, et cetera, we are moving in the right direction. And we are a leader in the Midwest. We're in the Midwest, and those, you know, that goes out to South Dakota, North Dakota, over to Ohio. And we're leading in virtually every one of the most important economic categories in that whole region. And in a time where tens of thousands of residents left the Midwest, we gained. And so, you know, and gained by more than everyone else. So the important thing is, are we moving in the right direction on all these fronts? And where we're not, in terms of some of our health indicators, we need to get at that. That also requires the financial wherewithal, commitment, courage, et cetera, to be able to address it. And so that's why I'm so, you know, hypersensitive and laser focused on making sure that we have the resources, we have the means. Come 2023, when there will be so much important issues to go over and discuss and hopefully promote, that we are in a position of strength then as well.
You know, I think it's fair to say, listening to you talk about that, that you see state government largely as an instrument for good, for positive change, as a catalyst. Let's face it, there are lots of people in your party, in the General Assembly, who see government as something to, as an evil, you know, a monster. And the best thing you can do is gut it, squeeze it, starve it, kick it out the door. How do you, I mean, that's such a fundamental difference. How do you reconcile that?
It's the only reason I'm here is to try to leave the place a little better, and whether it's break down barriers or make it more efficient, but it's service. And obviously there are things that only government can do, and there are things that we are charged to do. And so I look at our agenda as a to-do list that's informed by citizens. These things don't just appear in a dream. We are well informed around here, and the tweaks that we are offering, whether it's got to do with lead screening or sudden infant fatalities, we are informed by what's actually occurring. And then what is our proper role, for sure, state, local, and federal, different levels. How do we work together to, you know, indeed, as you suggest, make this, leave it a little better, in a better shape than how we found it. Government has a central role in that, as does the individual, as does the family, as does the community. But yeah, I seek to work together on all those fronts.
All right, we're almost out of time, but hey, we got to ask you this question. You're focused on this session day to day, and certainly you're focused also looking ahead, laying the groundwork for 2023, which you said promises to be a real, you didn't say gangbuster, but it sounds as if it will be interesting. Okay, what's beyond that for you? What's next step? You are, dare I say, use the phrase lame duck. What's next?
Well, I hope it's not easier to get shot when you're a lame duck. And no, I don't know. I've got 3 years left. That's an eternity in this walk. We'll have lots of options, and I'll get serious about entertaining those in the latter part of the last year.
I wouldn't have expected a different answer, but you can't fault me for asking. But let's try this look to the future. You started growing the beard in response to COVID, as many of us did. Will we know that COVID really is over? Not when you sign, if you sign 1001 and the governor's order on public health comes to an official end, or will we know it when we see no more facial hair?
This is between me and my dog, Henry.
So much for open door government.
There you go. Well, I mean, we'll no, we won't. We'll put, you know, we'll allow the sunlight in and we'll be transparent about it. But a lot of people think they end up looking like their pets, and I'm in good company.
No comment on that front. Governor, I thank you for taking time during what I know is a very busy week, perhaps the busiest you will have this session, to spend some time with us. We appreciate your commitment to public service in Indiana and your commitment to an informed citizenry. Thanks for taking time. Again, my guest has been Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, a second-term Republican. Thank you, Governor. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers, regular news analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Well, Ed, you've seen a lot of State of the State addresses. Your impression of this one?
Oh, we've slept through a lot of State of the State addresses over the years, John. This wasn't the most inspiring, but you know, I think you and I both know that these addresses follow a formula, and he really conformed to the formula for, you know, three quarters of the speech. You talk about the great economic development the state's seen in the last year, how we've had a great fiscal position, our taxes are low. You kind of look up in the balcony and refer to a few human bumper stickers to highlight some of the success of successful programs in the past year. You then humbly acknowledge some of the health and social shortcomings of the state. You talk about your legislative agenda. You praise, you know, some group, whether it's the military, law enforcement officers, healthcare workers, state employees, whatever. And then you get into the one big surprise element of the speech. And there wasn't one yesterday. You know, everybody was waiting for the big reveal. He didn't have one. It almost resembled more of a farewell address than perhaps the 2010 call to arms from Governor Daniels at the time of economic crisis. I think what really surprised me the most was that he didn't talk, as he did today with you, about the issue of the so-called wedge issues or the social issues, and perhaps saying, let's let those things simmer a little bit more and not let those get in the way of the economic development agenda.
Do you think that suggested that he, you're not saying that he is willing, would love to see those entertained by the lawmakers. Is it an issue that he simply said, out of sight, out of mind, if I don't talk about them, maybe, you know, they won't happen?
Well, I think he's had those conversations privately with the leaders, but as we talked last week, you know, there's a little bit of a disconnect between the third floor and the second floor, and I'm not sure that message is necessarily getting through.
How is this play out the rest? Is it more important, the public, the bully pulpit, as we saw the other night, or is it what you just talked about, those behind-the-scenes arm-twisting sessions?
A little bit of both. And you know, he certainly has enough chits to use. You talked about his electoral victory. He's popular with the public. And the only thing worse, I think, as Mo Udall once said, that than not using up all your chits during your first term is not using up all your chits in the first term is not using them in your second term.
It is odd to refer to him, that phrase, lame duck. Do you think that affects his approach this session?
Well, it could, but there's also talk about him running for other office in 2024. So he still has a lot of political capital, and he also has a lot of campaign capital that he can throw around this year.
The capital, literal and figurative. That is certainly the case. Ed, we thank you for your insight. Appreciate it. And we look forward to talking with you next week. While hospitals are wrestling with record numbers, some lawmakers are saying things are back to normal. We'll discuss the issue on the next Indiana Lawmakers. Until next week, take care.